This is a CC Radio podcast.
Welcome to episode 227 of the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. We be talking movies, son! My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the podcast with Countdown Movies and sometimes television in order of awesomeness so you don't have to. And today, it's a return to the traditional format of the top 10 last 10. What is that, you might ask?
What indeed? The top 10 last 10 is where we take 10 of the last movies we saw, put them in an order from 10 to 1, and tell you which ones suck and don't suck.
Yeah, fun, well, basically it's a way of us to review a lot of the films we don't get to cover individually on the main review apps.
That's right.
And give some time to both the worst and the best of what we've seen. So a little bit of a guide. My list certainly I've tried to make with one exception, I think. Tried to make very recent films. So they might still be popping over your Netflix or actually in two cases, not even released anywhere yet.
What?
So I'll talk about more about that as we get there.
Right.
Yeah. Some nice perks to being a movie reviewer on with a podcast every once in a while.
Sure.
So it's very exciting and no results from last week that we have to cover because, full disclosure, Wayne loves
do
what
this,
I do.
Paul! You're an asshole! Look, we're recording this one a little early because Paul has to go to fucking Melbourne and have fucking football relations with other motherfuckers.
Football relations.
Yeah, I don't know what you... These guys all go every year and they go to this like big thing and then they go see games and it's like... It's very Australian.
Well, I would assume that other cultures do the same thing and have football week.
Yeah, the way you guys do it is very Aussie, let me tell you.
We live in the most isolated city in Australia, or big city in Australia, so we fly to the home of football and do check out a whole bunch of games there. So, recording this one early, actually ahead of what we're recording next week, or last week.
They don't care, Paul.
I don't. So, there's no real feedback is what we're trying to say from last week's episode, and who knows, there may have been a lot. We'll save that for next week, including the result of last week's show as... Well, what we do have is an email, however, which we wanted to read out. And this, for those who aren't aware, we have a Patreon. Very generous bunches of listeners to the show do support us by providing some financial
bits and pieces. Little perks.
While we give some exclusive content over there to the listeners who are so generous to us. And we got a new one during the week. I wanted to read this email as a bit of both a plug of the Patreon, but also a real thank you to the people who have joined up. This is from Kevin Lalore. Hey, Paul and Wayne. So, you read my tweet on the past week's episode, so 2 weeks ago, movies that would never get made today, and it made my day.
Boom!
I even got a bit of a soundboard love as well.
I don't know about that one.
Shut up. In fact,
okay, now.
As I said in that tweet, your podcast is by far my favorite, and the one that takes precedence over all others once a new episode drops. That being said, dawned on me what a cheap bastard I am being by not being a patron. Well,
not at all.
That will be rectified today, I assure you. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to Paul talking about movies and Wayne talking about man crushes and dick for years to come.
That's good.
All the best, Kevin. Thank you so much, Kevin, for your generous support. We've had a couple of other people up their pledges as well. And look, we are really honored. It's gone
totally
much bigger than we ever thought it would.
By the way, Kevin, I have a suspicion that Paul has massacred your name like he has so many others in the past. I reckon your name is pronounced Lawler. L-A-W-L-O-R. He's going with some French shit like Lalila. So, you know, just let us know which one of us got that one right.
I'm just going to go with it's Kevin L.A. Law.
Oh, fuck, that's cooler than all of them. Yeah, cool. All right.
Thank you, Kevin. Regardless of how you pronounce your name, we really appreciate your support, as indeed we do all the other patrons of the show. Wayne and I will be kicking up what we're providing exclusively for the patrons. A lot more reviews coming out, a lot more extra stuff. In fact, Epic Film Guy Nick and I recorded a whole bunch of things that are going to be dropping into the feed.
By the way, there's a lot of filthy shit in the Patreon, okay?
Some.
No, okay, there's some.
Yeah.
Basically, most of my stories are just gross, right?
Some.
Yeah, you will get to know more about us, I should say.
Yeah, well, and maybe it's appropriate to use this again.
There's a few stories involving shit. That's all
I
gotta say.
Well, actually, that's more me than it is you.
Yeah, I know. Sorry.
It's a tease. It's not the real thing. All right, that's all the preamble. Let's get into it then. On the other side of the music cue, the top 10, last 10, latest edition. The top 10 last 10 is where we count down 10 of the most recent films that we've seen from worst to best, letting you know when we cross that line between recommend and not recommend. They're not linked in any other way.
That's right. And spoilers, I'm not going to be recommending much.
Ooh, whereas my list is solid.
Solid.
I would say I've got two massive pieces of shit, two pretty average films, and then okay, and then my top five are really good.
Well, I think that by making very poor choices myself, I can
stop in life film watching?
Both. But in this case, film watching.
Why is this specific?
Just in general. But I've made some bad choices here, but that means you people will hear about it and hear how bad it is and never make the mistake I made. I just gave you 12 hours.
PSA. We do a worst of the year at the end of the year, but in some ways this acts as a semi PSA as well.
Because some of mine you'd be fooled into thinking it could work, but you'd be wrong.
Well, do you want to lead away on that?
Yeah, I got a good one to start with, man. Woo!
Let's do it here then. What's your worst film you watched?
Worst film I watched is a movie called Domino.
Now, put this on my list. Oh, it's Brian De Palma.
Check it out, people. It's got Jamie Lannister and the Red Woman in it. So Nicholas, was it? No.
Costa Waldo
and fucking the other girl, Carice Van Houten. And it's directed by Brian De Palma. Yeah. Now, we all know Brian De Palma sucks now.
For the new listeners, and there are quite a few of them.
Sure.
Can you explain what we think about Brian De Palma? And what's the term we use for
him? Exactly. We've actually developed the term De Palma-ing. And that means that you were once a great director.
You were once.
Throw it in. Why not?
I missed it last week. I was Devo.
No one missed it. Fuckface.
Oh, sorry. 2 weeks ago. Yes. Yeah.
All right. He's once great and he's shit. So if you're ever a good director that's shit, you De Palma'd.
No, if you're ever good at anything and now you're shit at it, you De Palma'd.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sure. Yeah. Oh, wow. That's huge.
It's got wider application than just movie directing.
I'm De Palma'd at having sex. No, sorry.
I'm certainly De Palma'd at basketball.
Anyways, okay. So
let's check the tapes.
Sorry. Yes. So anyway, as I said, Brian De Palma is doing this one, and I'm like, how bad can it be?
Oh,
turns out very.
This was on my short list. Sorry, longer list to make this cut for this episode. So I'm glad I cut it because we get to talk about it anyway.
Okay, people. This is a Danish police story. So it's a Danish police officer, Jamie Lannister, who's, you know, seeking justice for his partner's murder at the hands of this Libyan immigrant guy who's another dude. And it's basically a cop show, right? Yeah. And it's set in Denmark? No.
Well, it crosses a couple of countries, divides.
Yeah, a couple of countries. Yeah. But for some reason, everyone's speaking really American English.
Oh, yeah.
Did I miss something? Is it like a...
No. It's just lazy fucking...
It's not Hunt for Red October thing where they... Nope. Where they, nope. Okay. Nope. All right. So...
Because that's what they do. Even in scenes where two Danish people or... Denmarkian people, whatever, are talking to each other.
Yeah.
They're still talking English.
They're speaking English, right? And he's even doing his Jamie Lannister English. Like, he's not even got an accent. Anyway, it is inarguably dull. This film is 81 minutes, and it still somehow has a lumbering pace.
It feels like 2.5 hours.
It's like, because I looked at 81, I'm like, fantastic. And then, oh, Jesus, it felt like 2 hours. Or, well, more longer. It's also amateurishly made. There is no distinguishable style or... Even a base level of craftsmanship.
It is awful.
It's really bad.
It truly stinks up the place. And it's mind-boggling, as much as we make fun with De Palma-ing, to think this is the dude who directed Dressed to Kill.
Yes.
The Untouchables.
Scarface.
Mission Impossible. All this Scarface. Shit. Like,
that's the actual worst thing about this. You are watching a once titan just blindly lumber through.
The last 20 years, give it, since Snake Eyes. He's been on a downward trajectory.
Yeah, that's right. Like, there's a couple of shots in which...
Do your impersonation of Brian De Palma's career.
No, the thing is, like, the cops are doing the most shit version of being a cop ever. At the beginning, Jamie Lannister just leaves his gun in the apartment because there was a naked woman in there that distracted him. Then there's this close-up
shot. Who hasn't
made
that mistake?
We all do it, all right? But I ain't... It wasn't a gun. It was a cock pump.
But the...
And I didn't have to borrow my partner's one when I got to the scene. Well, you'll understand if you saw the movie. It's a piece of shit, everyone.
Yes. But it is incompetency after incompetency. And then it's with arguably one of the worst climaxes.
Dude, we have to talk about this climax, okay? I'm gonna
we don't normally spoil top 10
last. We're going to spoil it because do not see this, all right?
Yeah.
For fucking
hell. If you're at all interested in seeing Brian De Palma straight to video or download latest film, skip forward to 1 minute.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, go.
All right, here's the thing, right? The climax made me laugh out loud. It involves a drone.
A drone.
Which is videotaping this guy who's about to blow himself up in a stadium. It's that kind of movie, all right? Anyway, what happens is, Jamie Lannister attacks the drone controller. He somehow drops or his controls. The drone then goes headfirst into the bomber and accidentally cuts his neck. It just slices his neck with the blade. I'm like, what the f-? I burst out laughing.
It was Guy Pearce, right?
Guy Pearce, yeah.
The only reason Guy Pearce is in this film is because Carice Van Houten is his partner.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Is he doing the Red Woman?
Or Clarice, whatever. Carice Van
Houten. Yeah,
that's it. Yep, they're together.
What a legend!
Well, I'll tell you what.
She's the hottest woman in Game of Thrones.
His legend, no.
She's the hottest.
No, she's not.
Hotter than Daenerys.
Nope.
Everyone, she is the hottest.
Nope.
Oh, bitch, please. All right. I expect that. No one agrees with me. All right.
Well, there is no shock at all there, that's for sure.
No. I didn't know that.
If you're going to use bitch, please, do it properly.
Bitch, 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 bitch,
all
please.
Stupid soundboard. Okay.
Yeah, yes. I 100% agree. This is god-awful. What would you give it as a score, as a guideline?
This is atrocious. This is a fucking 10.
A 10 out of 100.
Because I'm so pissed off at him. Like, I'm like, what are you doing?
Yep.
Just don't do it anymore, then.
Can't argue. It's terrible. Nice way to kick us off. I'll tell you another film. And this film got a cinematic release in the States. I don't think it is in cinemas here in Australia. Because otherwise, shoo in, lock it in right now. The worst film of 2019,
what?
Without question, is Harmony Korine's The Beach Bum.
That's on my list!
Fuck. I hope it's now at number 9.
No, it's like, oh, this is going to be interesting. It's up high. It's at 7.
Well, it's not high. It's higher.
Sorry, it's higher. Yeah, but I am, oh, God. All right, please.
Is Domino a worse film than The Beach Bum? Yes. For one reason, yes. And one reason only. Matthew McConaughey is good in this movie.
Yes. He actually gets what he's supposed to get done.
So this is a film that's basically, it's meant to be a comedy. Good fucking luck getting any laughs out of this movie.
I honestly don't believe it's a comedy. It's just...
The logline on Letterboxd has an irreverent comedy about the misadventures of Moondog, a rebellious stoner and lovable rogue who lives large. If you want to watch a movie about a dude who's not done one single day's worth of work in his life, marries somehow into money and then squanders anything, including his love, his opportunities, his parenthood, and somehow literally sets fire to money during the course of this film, see The Beach Bum.
Not only that, his wife is Isla Fisher,
mm-hmm.
who's a hot millionaire heiress.
Yep.
Right?
And inexplicably is into him.
Yes, also inexplicably. And there's weird scenes in this film where...
Oh, my God.
With like, he'll just be casually eating her out, like, and on the deck of a thing while she's getting a pedicure.
Yep.
And stuff, and then she'll be talking, and that'll be a dialogue scene where he's like... and he, like, come up for air.
I hate Harmony Korine. I fucking hate him.
Did he do that fucking James Franco movie?
Yeah, Spring Breakers.
I never saw it. Was that shit?
It's one of
like,
the biggest
it sounds like it's like this.
Pieces of shit you've ever seen.
Really?
Yet he has his fans, clearly.
No, it's like fucking...
Critics kind of dug this movie. I clearly will never be a proper critic.
I also will never be one. Let me tell you that why this one went to number 7.
Unless you... McConaughey is convincing in the role.
Yeah.
That's the only reason it gets anything more than 10.
No, Matthew McConaughey is good. And you know what? It's got Snoop Dogg in it. It's got Zac Efron in it. It's got like a
Zac Efron
bunch of...
has a brief breeze. But I mean, fucking Snoop Dogg does nothing in this movie.
Well, the thing is, I actually would tell you this is a weird... I don't even know how to describe this movie because it's ostensibly about that.
Sorry, allow me to reiterate. Piece of shit.
Piece of shit. Okay. Well, it seems to show you interconnected, not that connected scenes of just his weird life where he's kind of a celebrated member of the Florida party community and he reads poetry on stage at Warren Buffett concerts and stuff like that. And it seems like just random bits of about his life. Occasionally, it's sort of interesting. Like, you get Martin Lawrence in... No?
Nope.
I will tell you this, right?
Do you know the only way this film could have been worse? Had they somehow also worked in Kevin Hart.
Oh, God, that would have put the nail in the coffin for you. It definitely gets tiresome, and it's definitely like the sudden random shit that happens in the film that it's got no tone or has just such a wildly weird tone that you don't care.
There's a big spoiler, which I won't give away, where the film threatens to kind of kick off in a different direction and become good.
Absolutely.
And I thought, okay, all right, I see it now, what this film's going to be.
No, it doesn't
Paul,
go there.
Why the fuck would there be any kind of response to the first act of the film in a way that any living human being could relate to?
What I think is that it feels like a stoner film, but not that a stoner comedy.
There's nothing funny about it.
It's like the guy's stoned when he made it. That's what it looks like feels like to me.
The guy's name is Harmony Korine.
Yeah.
What chance is he that he's straight all the time?
I mean, on that...
Judgmental win.
No, it's fine. It's fine. I mean, like, you can appreciate it on that meta level, but then I don't think you need to be baked when you see it anyway. So, you know.
Fucking hated this movie.
It's
fucking hated it.
It's not good.
This is one of the films I watched in my 500 movie watching challenge. It's right down there. It's in the worst five that I saw.
I understand.
Given that it had cinematic release in the States, I'm not sure what we'll agree on the parameters for best and worst of the year later. But if we are counting that, it didn't hit cinemas here, I don't think.
No, I know. I actually heard about it when it came out, and I thought it was funny because Matthew McConaughey is actually playing bongos in it, right? I thought that's what it was doing. He's just playing on. He's like doing a thing for people because Snoop Dogg's in it, and fucking all these other people in it. And by the way, there's so many titties in this show. It's just titty upon titty.
How it got to seven.
No, I'm not saying that.
It got two extra spots on Wayne's list.
It didn't give me
for lefty and right.
It was not a titty boost, right, for this film, right?
For this film.
That's what we're calling it now. I've definitely given films a titty boost before. But
yeah, hang on. If we rewind about 3 minutes, Wayne says, I'm never going to be a real reviewer. For sure.
Titty boost will be my professional name.
Wayne Titty Booster Ruzu.
Right, it's coming at you. Anyway. Yeah, look, it's really weird, guys. Don't go see this movie.
I was going to see it. It's to download or stream. Don't bother.
No, it's just nothing. It's just a waste of your time.
A bit of a shout out to Blake Jarvis. We'll hear what he thinks about the film later on in our listener feedback segment.
There'll be a reason. So there'll be people out there who dig weird movies like this, and that's going to be your thing. But it's, yeah, not my jam.
Piece of shit. Your number nine, sir.
My number nine is, you're going to love that this is here and not at number 10. It's a rom-com called How to Be Single.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Never heard of it.
Well, here's why. It's got Rebel Wilson in it.
Oh.
That's it. No, I'm... But it also has other players like Allison...
Jenny?
No.
Oh.
Allison Madman. Allison Community. Allison Brie.
Oh, Allison Brie.
Allison Brie, yeah. Her and Leslie Mann.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yeah, digging her.
Yeah, she's attractive.
Oh, I love her.
Woman
love her.
Of around about.
Love her. Judd Apatow's wife, I believe.
Ah.
And
sorry, Judd.
And also that chick from 50 Shades of Grey.
Dakota Johnson.
Her, yeah. Right? So it's a piece of shit, and I think the problem is with Rebel Wilson, because there's a couple of
you
funny...
You can just stop the sentence right there, you're right.
But there's some funny bits in there, like Rebel Wilson is an Aussie in New York who's like a bit of a... rough, like she'll say, like, if you use an emoji, I'll tit punch you, right? Shit, like she says shit like that, right? And so I know
comedy,
but there's a few reasonable lines that should work but somehow don't quite hit. And it's just, she's a bit like a Bryony Stinson character where she says these rules about, you know,
Rebel Wilson's rules.
Yeah, Rebel Wilson is doing it. So it's about the 50 Shades girl, but it's, you know, it's a crappy, shitty, whatever rom-com. But I will tell you this, it has excellent cinematography.
Okay.
Whoever's the DP or whatever is actually composing shots, which I'm like, that's beautiful. But you're still, it's not enough to make up for the movie.
It's a romantic comedy.
It's a romantic comedy. And like, but the first third is actually comedy. And then the rest of it is a total drama.
Oh.
Yeah, it's just.
So it's a dramedy.
Well, I think they just ran out of laughs. I think that's what happened. It's like, let's make this funny. And then they ran out at 30 minutes. So, yeah. Then it's like, oh, no, what? It's, look, a girl, I'm sorry to do this. A young girl might like it. You know what I mean?
Okay.
It's about that kind of
thing. If it's pitched at a young female audience,
definitely is.
Then so be it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay.
Okay. Well, from your number nine that I haven't seen to my number nine that you haven't seen, I'm going with a film. A while back, I reviewed Annabelle Comes Home, and I said that was the sixth film in the Conjuring universe. I was wrong. There is this little outlier film called The Curse of La Llorona.
Oh, God. Someone's been asking me to actually see this.
Directed by Michael Chaves. And it is also in the Conjuring universe, and it exists there by the benefit of one side character from one previous film popping up for 1.5 minutes.
The barest of threads.
It is fucking bullshit.
Is it?
It is the most unfrightening, biggest piece of shit horror film of 2019, and is guaranteed to be on my worst 10 of the year list.
Why is it so bad? I saw the trailer for this, and I was like, fuck that, it looks
not
scary.
Frightening at all.
Even the girl with the weird eyes?
Oh, it's terrible. It's jump scare city. There's no atmosphere. There's no atmosphere, except none of them land. I did not balk once, and I fell asleep in this film four fucking times.
Four times?
Yep. Three times in one night. When fuck this, went to bed, went back and rewatched the whole thing the second night. And I'm like, no wonder I fell asleep three times.
So this is just cashing in on the franchise.
It is. I thought Annabelle Comes Home was, you know, spinning its wheels a little bit, but it was well made. It was well executed.
Yeah.
Had likable characters. Fuck this piece of shit. Stars Linda Cardellini as this social worker back in the 70s who manages to get involved in the curse of this weeping woman who drowned her kids when she found out her husband was fucking some other chick, okay. You know, as you do, and then gets cursed to wander eternity killing other people's children, because that makes perfect fucking sense.
Wow.
Anyway, look, regardless of what it apparently is a real Mexican legend. So,
yeah.
So they've just built on that and then connected it into the Conjuring universe. And apparently James Wan, who is, you know, he's the emperor of horror at the moment.
Did he do this?
No, he produced it and he hand-selected Michael Shaves to be the director. Not sure why, James. I'm not sure whether you've lost your shit and it's just not as funny anymore.
Has this guy done anything?
Nothing of consequence anyway. And I say produced it, I think maybe just executive produced it.
No, his name's on the door, man, that's all.
Unfortunately, this is the dude who's directing Conjuring 3, so that really worries me, the direction that film's going, because this is garbage.
Like, so good.
There's just nothing redeemable about this movie at all.
If you're saying that means this is a real
Your horror
shit.
Film is meant to scare people.
Yeah.
Bottom line, that's all you're about. If you're a comedy, you make people laugh. If you're a horror film, you've got to scare people. There's nothing frightening about this movie, because she's chasing kids. And I'm not saying no kids die in the film, because they do, unlike Annabelle Comes Home. But in this particular film, there's no doubt at all about the main characters and their fates. None whatsoever.
So you just make the call and you're like, that's going to happen. Boom, then it happens. I don't know.
It's awful.
What scares me is that you remember the movie Us, which I thought was shit, and you thought was, okay.
No, I thought it was good. Yeah. I liked it. I didn't love it because it had a lot of problems.
No, I thought that was real shit. Now, you like, so if there's anything good about a horror movie, you'll defend it, but you defend nothing about this one, which means it's a bag of ass. So, all right.
It really is offensively bad, and I don't understand how anybody can give this a pass.
What's it called? The Curse of
La Llorona. The Curse of La Llorona.
Okay. All right. One to miss.
Mm-hmm.
As is my number 8. This movie is called The Hummingbird Project.
Oh, I saw this. It's a piece of shit.
Fuck. All right, it sounds
it's
like
boring.
It is so boring. This is pretty good like premise for a movie, right? It's got Jesse Eisenberg, I'm Paul's favorite, but I like Jesse Eisenberg. I think he's great. Alexander Skarsgård, Salma Hayek, and they like the Jesse Eisenberg and Alexander Skarsgård are brothers who work for a stockbroking firm owned by Salma Hayek. And they decide to go rogue and try and build this fiber cable in a straight line from their stock exchange to where they are. And they get like a 1 millisecond head start on the stock quotes, which means that they can make the orders before anyone and make a boatload of money.
And if you're already yawning, let me tell you, the film will do nothing to cure that.
Well, you know what? Like, I personally, I like The Big Short and shit like that. So I don't mind like movies like this because it's really not about that thing.
Don't compare The Big Short to The Hummingbird Project. That's not fair at all.
You're right. It's not. But anyway.
It's dreary. It's drab. It's boring.
That's the problem.
The highlight is Salma Hayek in a suit. That's it.
Did you dig her gray hair?
Look, I think she rocks gray hair better than anyone else.
I think she does as well. I think she looks great. But what I will say to you is that this could have been good, but it dragged so much.
Oh.
Like, it's an introspective tale, and the stock exchange thing is really a background to kind of what they're trying to, I think, tell you as your human experience. But the issue is that the movie slows down so hard that it's, to make its point, it slows down so much that it stops being interesting. So I'm like, this is really, I was pissed off. Jesse Eisenberg needs to do something better soon, because I really like him. The Social Network's awesome. I love that
show. He was great in Social Network.
So, and he was actually probably pretty good here too. It was just a shit movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like he sold what he was doing.
This was a 35 for me. What is it for you?
Oh, no, it's probably about 40. It's 40.
Okay, yeah. So 2 stars. We're both around the 2-star mark. I 100% agree. All right, we're nowhere near recommending anything yet.
Nope.
And we're still not going to be with my number 8 either, which is a film that has never been released in the States. It's called City of Lies, directed by Brad Furman.
That's on my list too. Oh, God.
All right, well, we can both talk about it. That's fine.
All right. Wait, was it released in the States? Is
never.
That why I didn't even hear about it?
Yeah, well, okay. So basically, it's the based on a true story of the investigation into the death of Biggie Smalls. Right? And it follows a journalist played by Forest Whitaker who contacts one of the detectives on the case played by Johnny Depp.
Mm-hmm.
And effectively, due to legal ramifications about who owns the rights really to the movie and which production company, it just got buried.
Is that what happened?
Yeah. I can't confidently say it was this and that. Although I know that's the vagaries that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
It wasn't not released because of Johnny Depp and Amber's thing, but that didn't help.
Oh, didn't even think about it.
It wasn't not released because I thought it was terrible. It just wasn't not released.
Yeah. Sorry, I can see that.
I'm saying that double things. It wasn't released because of this infighting between studios.
All right, so it wasn't a production a bad movie kind of issue.
That said, I'm sure they would have found a way around it if it was a better movie.
Absolutely. This movie is all retrospective, so it's set kind of present day, and Johnny Depp is telling Forrest Whitaker the tale of when he was on this thing in the 90s, right? And they flash back and forth and that kind of thing, so that's fine. The problem with the movie is that nothing they show... The actual case of Biggie Smalls versus, you know, Death Row Records and Bad Boy, whatever this, that, that's a really interesting story. I have all my cousins who like, you know, like all gangster shit and stuff like that, and I like it too. What the hell, right? I used to... That tale is very enthralling. This is not that, though. It doesn't really give you any new information about the tale, and it's more about the investigation of the tale, basically being that there's some cover-up in the LAPD. Again, it was just... okay, it was just like, it was, but probably, you obviously hate it more than me.
I didn't hate it. I just think it's really meh.
But, yeah, you just...
I certainly wouldn't recommend it.
Yeah, that's right.
It does nothing new. It achieves nothing that you haven't seen in much better police procedurals. And the fact that it's contextualized, or at least builds off the Biggie Smalls case.
Yes.
That's the only in. And I'm not into that scene the way your cousins and apparently you are by extension.
Just
this
a little.
This is a man who listens to fucking, I don't know, insert pop. Young little girl.
I think we should say Wilson Phillips.
There you go.
There you go. Yeah.
It's just not, it's not a good film.
Nah.
It starts out okay.
It really does.
The first 20, 30 minutes I was in.
So was I.
And the longer it goes, the more bored I became. Mm. And ultimately I gave no shits, especially knowing, of course, they don't catch the killer.
The ending is unsatisfying because you know that no one's caught the killer.
And that's a matter of record. That's not a spoiler.
Yeah.
Biggie Smalls' killer remains at large today.
That's right. And I don't know. This was like, I was going to recommend this to all my cousins, say, yo, this is your jam, right? But I'm not going to do that now because it's ass.
Mm-hmm.
So
100% agree. I still think Johnny Depp's a pretty good actor.
I think he does everything he can with this.
I don't think he chooses particularly good roles.
Nope.
And if you need any more evidence of that, then you see Yoga Hoses and fucking Tusk.
No, he did that because he's friends with Kevin Smith now. Or their kids go to the same school.
No, their kids are friends.
Yeah.
And they're in the
movie. But
they,
you know, that's still cool. I mean, I actually like that he does that even though it's bald, right?
Point.
But over here, it's just a shit movie. He's doing an okay job. It's just a shit movie.
Likewise, Forrest Whitaker, who's better than this material that he's presented to me.
He looks really young, though, man.
Forrest Whitaker.
Yeah.
Black don't crack, man.
Black don't crack. You're right. Lucky bastard.
All right, so that's my 8. Over to you for your 7.
My 7 is where I put a beach bum, so we're going right back to you.
All right, my number 7 is a Netflix original, which created a little bit of a wave because it's a minority-based comedy.
Oh, no. We watched all the same movies.
Did we really?
I think so.
It's always been my maybe. Directed by, and good luck here, Paul, Nanatska Khan.
Yep, totally on my list.
It is on your list?
Yep.
This is the most cross-ups we've ever had on a top 10 laughter.
So weird. Damn Netflix.
Okay, can I be really straightforward with this
review? Sure.
It's nice to see minorities in the lead, right? And Amy Wong, apparently very funny woman, if you see her stand up and whatever else.
I've not, but...
Not very funny in this movie.
Oh.
I didn't think. I also did not think that Randall Park, apparently also a very funny dude and his band and whatever, he does that sort of speaking.
No, he's in Veep and he kills it.
Right? Not very funny in this film. I did not find anything about this film funny. It wasn't offensive. It was just, okay. A few chuckles here and there.
Yeah.
Until we get to the film-saving scenes involving a cameo.
Yes.
It's a huge spoiler to say who that person is, although it's done the rounds.
It's been all around.
This has been out for, 3 months now, give or take.
You could just say it.
All right. If you just don't want to know anything about Always Be My Maybe and you're interested enough on the basis of that review... to see it, knowing that it doesn't get a pass from me, at least. I'm not sure about Wayne.
Mm.
Does it get a pass?
No, I don't recommend it.
No, there you go. Then skip forward. For the rest of you who are still here with us, Keanu Reeves is a fucking godsend. If not for him, this film would have been utter dreck. But his two scenes in the restaurant and then back at his apartment / hotel are some of the funniest shit that I've seen in a long, long time.
What is weird is that, he's playing himself, right? But he's playing himself as a douche.
Yes, exactly.
Which is really good. But more than that, I think that it was written longer than I expected. It wasn't just a cameo. It was like a couple of scenes.
Thank God. Had it just been him walking into the restaurant going, ha, 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 and walking out, this film still would have been a fucking 1 out of 5.
Oh, yeah.
Because it's not funny. It fails. It's a romantic comedy. Okay, the romantic part, maybe that kind of jive, but that's not my thing.
Mm.
The comedy fails completely.
There was a scene that I thought was funny, which was where, like, what's his name? Randall Park. He has this really crazy girlfriend who makes some bullshit food and, like, gives it to him. And he's in the middle of, like, him eating and stuff. You can see his face changing and he's just getting pissed off with the fact that he has to eat this shit. And it actually made it quite funny.
Who hasn't been there?
Yeah, yeah. Who hasn't been there? Like, what the fuck is this?
And women alike, I'm sure.
I'm sure. If men are cooking for women, they're fucked.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, unless you're a chef or a cook.
Yeah, but there's like 10 of those guys around. Yep. So.
Yeah, I just think that it rescued the film. It propped it up to a 2.5-star because Keanu's scenes are the funniest of the year. I'd give those scenes 4.5 stars. The rest of the film is barely a 1.5.
How old is he?
54, I think.
54, he's killing it, man. Mm-hmm. He's fucking still doing this shit.
It's brilliant. It's so funny.
Just the slow-mo kisses and the air kisses and stuff. Where he's like,
I'd almost like to see a film about that character. That'd probably get a bit old.
No, it'd get old really quickly. Because even the scene got old quickly.
Didn't for me.
Really?
When they got into a punch-up, I was like losing my shit laughing.
Really? Yeah. All right. Well, that's actually way better for you.
It works so well because you know he's such a nice guy. This wouldn't work if you put, I don't know, Ben Affleck. It just wouldn't have worked at all. Or anyone like that.
You're right. They actually timed this very well.
Yeah.
So, okay. I thought that was on my list. It's actually on my honorable mention.
Well, not that we have honorable mentions, but you cut it at the end. All right, I didn't make your list.
No, my number six movie is Shaft.
Yeah, I could have put this on my list.
Okay.
Did you dig it? Yep.
Well, is that your joke? Can you dig it? Yeah, okay, well done.
It's always great. When your co-host who claims to be really supportive of your comedy.
You didn't give me the face for I'm making a joke thing. You just said it and then I looked at you, so I didn't know what it was going to do. There you go. But it's well done. It's well done. Shaft, everyone, is a Netflix original show.
It is.
And it takes Shaft, Samuel Jackson. It's actually a sequel to that movie, even though it's just called Shaft again.
Yep.
Right?
Because why not?
It's not
confusing
right?
at all.
No one cares, right? Yep. Exactly. And he introduces his son, who is nothing like him. He's like an analyst for CIA or FBI or some shit like
who
that.
Who wears short sleeve shirts and ties.
Yeah, yeah. He's got sweater vests and stuff. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It also shows the original chef, Richard Roundtree, and it's basically, it's a New York tale. It's your cop shit. So don't think this was good. You didn't mind it, did you?
I'll tell you what. May have had a few beers before I watched this one.
Yeah,
was very surprised. I didn't love it.
You mentioned this to me recently. I didn't like that. I'm like, what? And then I was like, okay.
But I liked it. I did. And yet I am in the minority. I see the scores on Letterboxd. I see the reviews online. And people are shitting all over this. And I'm like, for Netflix, which is having a really awful year, I thought this was pretty fun.
Really? Yeah. All right, look, the good things about this movie is that it's basically that the young Shaft has to, you know, become like, because even though he's prissy and whatever, his friend gets capped and then he has to go and find the killer and he's trying to use old like Samuel Jackson Shaft to help him out and, you know, that sort of shit, right?
That's funny.
Exactly.
Seems suggestive.
I just don't even know what it is, right? So the good things about this film are is that three generations of the Shaft thing, it's actually quite a good feeling movie. It's very megaplexy, this movie, right? If it wasn't Netflix. It's like, it's a clean Samuel Jackson's getting paid.
Well, it's clean. It's Samuel L. Jackson, you know, doing his thing, ramping it up to 11 and being a bad motherfucker.
That's it. It's all that. So that novelty made me click on the film. So something about it in that premise is at least interesting. Good.
What didn't work for you then?
Well, I'll tell you one other thing that did work for me. Sam Jackson giving his son shit for being too white and not enough of a man was quite funny. There's a scene where young Shaft says to his dad that he's going to go, I'm going to go see mom after I'm out with his young lady friend. And Sam Jackson goes, how are you going to see your mom later when you should be drowning in Passé?
How did you not like this movie?
What the fuck is Passé? That's some class. All right.
Yep.
So, all right. So that was the best thing about the movie. The bad thing is that it's just like, I don't know, like the young Shaft, he's like bookish for some of the movie. And then all of a sudden he's an ass kicker. Like all of a sudden he can bust ass and shoot guns and shit. I was like, where the fuck did that come from?
I laugh my ass off at the scene on the dance floor where he's drunk and he kicks those dudes' asses with Brazilian drunk fighting or whatever the fuck it's called.
Oh, Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Yeah. But like, where did it come from? I don't know. I needed to know he was a badass first, and then, I don't know.
Well, he is a CIA analyst, and he has had to do the training and whatever else.
I don't think analysts do have to do that.
Maybe not.
Anyway, yeah, okay. Obviously,
I'm still not going to fire you about it.
Yeah, it's not a mistake. I'm saying, I don't recommend it.
Okay, you don't recommend it. I do quasi-recommend my number six. And that is the first of the two significantly advanced screenings that I got to see. This one is part of the Perth Revelation International Film Festival.
Very nice.
It's called Locusts. So nobody's seen this film, so I will be the first person to speak
Locusts.
About it. It's Australian. It's directed by a guy named Heath Davis. And the writer of the film was in the room with us. In a cinema,
that's a bit cool.
In a cinema that seats like 100 people maybe. So I was a little bit uncomfortable. Oh, shit. There was a bit of pressure to like this
movie. Yeah, you better like it.
That's right. He was a good bloke. He's a his name is Angus Watts. And he's actually a radiographer who lives in Queensland somewhere. And he said like four times over, look, I got to get on a plane, the red eye back home, because I work tomorrow morning because we're on a Sunday night.
That's cool.
Yeah. So they are doing the indie sort of film festival circuits first. And then they're going to recut the film and release it to audiences. I think he said September, maybe October for Australia. I don't know if this will get international release.
Why?
It's basically a neo-noir kind of mystery thriller crime film about a big city executive who lives in Sydney, I think. Modern day.
Yeah, yeah.
Who goes back to his small hometown of wherever, somewhere in country.
New South Wales.
Yep. To see his dad dies, and he goes back for his funeral and reconnects with his brother who stayed in the town the whole time, and they both run afoul of the local gang of criminals.
Oh, shit.
Who then try to extort money out of the big city banker dude. That's basically the film.
Really?
Meanwhile,
that sounds interesting.
He runs into his ex-girlfriend who...
As you do.
He abandoned basically when he got out of town when he left 15 or 20 years, whatever it was before.
Who's that?
She's played by someone you might recognize. Her name's Jessica McNamee.
Her name sounds familiar.
She was in The Meg. She was Jason Statham's girlfriend in The Meg.
Yeah. She's... Oh, that's all good.
Yeah. And Battle of Sexes as well, and The Loved Ones back in the day.
There
so
you are.
She's starting to make a bit of a name for herself. So they got quite a reasonable cast together for that. Peter Phelps has a little bit of a role in
it. Peter Phelps.
The dude from Two Hands who says, show's a good mate.
Oh, him, he in
he's
it.
One of the bad guys.
That's class. Yeah.
And so much so that when the writer got up, his name's Steve fucking hell. I'm going to leave that in. Steve Lemoquan.
Whoa, that's fucking wow.
Marquan, let's just go with that.
What am I talking about? You probably fucked it up.
I absolutely have. That's the gag. The writer even said, and when Steve wanted to be in the film, I'm like, yeah, mate, show's good.
No, everyone gets that. That's good shit.
It's funny that when we're not the only people in the world that think that's a great quote. Yeah, look, it's fine. It's just a bit predictable. It's just a bit rote, and there's nothing.
What's it called, Lucas? Is that with a bad? Oh, is it a spoiler?
There's an environmental theme that runs through the film, which comes into play late in the movie, and it's too heavy-handed. It's a bit on the nose.
Okay.
And he actually acknowledged and said, we've gotten feedback from the US distributor that it's too much of that. We're going to recut it. So you're seeing the festival version of the cut. It'll be a couple of minutes shorter when gets released to cinemas, and that, I think they'll get rid of some of that.
Okay.
And that will make it a little bit better. So okay. I think it's 3 stars. So it's a qualified recommend. I saw it with friend of the show, Campbell. He gave it 3 stars as well, so... So there you go. It's not a bad film at all. It's just maybe not as good as you might hope it would be when you sort of look at the poster and the like.
You know how I go with recommends? It doesn't matter about the star rating, right? It doesn't matter. It could be a 4-star movie and I still might not recommend it because I dug it.
Idiot.
No, because I dug it, you might not.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? So it's that kind
but
of
But I thing. Think the casual cinema goer here...
Three stars, you'll
there's enough
it.
To see here. Yeah. Enough to make it worthwhile. I've got nothing else to do. But it's not a hardcore... I'm going to give a much stronger recommend to something else coming.
Yeah, that's the thing. I have to like fucking love something before I recommend it. So, yeah. All right. My number 5 was City of Lies, dude. So we're going right back to you.
And you're still not recommending it, are you?
No.
Man, your list is terrible.
No, I'm telling you, it's a ball sack.
All right, my number 4, I wonder if it will also make your list because it's new. It's I don't know if it's reached cinemas here in Australia yet, but it certainly has in the States, and it made a bit of a wave among the critics. It's Olivia Wilde's directorial debut, Booksmart.
Lou! This movie's fucking awesome!
Well, you can't say Lou because you don't know how good my other films are.
Well, yeah, that's a good point, but fuck you. So...
Fuck you for being right, asshole. Yeah, Booksmart. It's basically, the simplistic summary of this film.
Yep.
Female Superbad.
Sure.
Right.
That's the first thing I thought when I saw it. Right.
But better.
No, better. It is better.
It is better because it's better written. It's better directed. I think it is funnier.
Because
it doesn't rely on crudeness just for its humor.
I would agree with you. This is a more charming kind of funny, whereas Superbad was more like, gross, but a bit charming, funny. So I get what you're saying there. This is a really extremely well put together film, and I didn't know it was Olivia Wilde until the last credit. And I went, what, that hot woman?
It's disgraceful that she's so hot and talented as well.
It's fucking ridiculous.
Yeah. The rest of us may just all look in awe.
Well, this movie is about two young girls, basically.
They're graduating high school, they're finishing up, and they realize...
And they're both kind of nerds. One's at a
class the massive president. Nerds. Yeah. So Beanie Feldstein, who's making a bit of a name. She's popping up all over the place.
I don't know where I've seen her before. And initially I thought I don't like her, but it took about 3 minutes and then I liked her.
I just started watching What We Do in the Shadows, the TV series.
Yeah.
She's in that as well.
Oh, she's in that. Okay.
Yeah. And Caitlin Dever. And they're both very good in their roles.
She was in like some not ordinary, no ordinary family type shit TV show with Julie from fucking Angel in it. Anyway, sorry.
Beanie was in Lady Bird and Neighbours 2 as two other films as well. Yeah, so they're both, they're, like I said, they're nerds. They've spent their whole life studying really hard. And when they casually go around and they got into the college they want to go to, when they go around and ask all the people who've had fun and been jocks and nerds, and not nerds, jocks and just party goers, they've all gotten into the colleges they want to go to as well.
That's right. And so it robs her of a personality.
What the fuck?
Yeah, you guys fucked around all the time. I'm the only one who goes to college. No.
Yep. So they decide to live large on the last weekend.
Last weekend, yeah. Yep. The relationship between those two leads is endearing, funny, and enjoyable, in my opinion, because it's really cool. I can see why this got so many props. I reckon each scene is handled and edited for very effective comedy. That's why I'm impressed, all right? Because there's bits in here which you could play it like a cheap joke, but they don't do it that way. I don't know how to describe it, but it's very well cut. There's a scene where there's a lesbian porn audio that comes through the taxi speakers when they're funny. In a car. But I was howling at that bit. And then
when the teacher's driving as well.
The teacher's driving. That was really funny. And then the scene is like, there's one scene where one of the leads dives into a pool and she swims underwater through all these bodies. It's filmed beautifully and it's this blaring, like, just soundtrack. But I remember looking at it going, that's beautiful. Like, that is really, really cool. It leads up to a weird moment, but it's cool.
I thought even the slow-mo water balloons hitting the car's
face. That's cool at the end. Yeah. Yep. Someone's got a real... Well, Olivia Wilde has got a fantastic eye. And if I were a high school graduate now, I reckon I'd really love this film. I love it now, and I'm not. I'm just an old man. Every scene's well executed. So somehow a lot like a Team Comedy, but not like any Team Comedy. Do you know what I mean?
It's got heart.
Yes, that's what it is.
Character, it's a coming-of-age film, basically. Yes, totally. And that's what it is first. It's comedy second. And it works. It's not brilliant. I see 5 stars everywhere. I'm like, no. It's not that engaging. It's not funny enough, and it's not poignant enough to be 5 stars. But it's very good.
Something that I found really novel is that with American Pie and stuff like that, you have these scenes where, like, you know, it's like the first sexual experience. It's a bit this and that. That version of this scene in this movie is between two girls. But the charm of I don't know what I'm doing sexually and stuff was somehow sweetly handled here. Or it's just really nice and you can still identify with it, even though I haven't hooked up with two girls. So, it's you know what I mean? Like, I don't know what it's like to be a lesbian. Please. I don't know what it's like to be a lesbian, but it seems like a lot of fun.
I love the way that you somehow turned what was a very heartwarming...
I know, we can't make this too nice.
...into being creepy as fuck.
I think you'll find that wasn't creepy at all. It was just comedy. All right.
Eat my ass! Eat all the S's, man!
Whatever. Listen, every character in this film, I'll tell you this, is likable on some level. Every character.
Yeah, even the one that...
Even the one that you're not supposed to like is kind of likable.
Yeah, by the end of the film. Yes. Absolutely.
That's what I mean. Mm. So that is really something... When's the last movie you've heard like that?
Well, I think that they make a real effort to show you the tropes or the cliched characters, the stereotypes, and then by the end show you that, no, they're all people too.
And it made it really cool. So yes, very awesome movie. Can't believe it's so low. Okay. You must have seen some class after this, baby.
Well, we'll see after we hear your number four.
My number four, people, is The Highwaymen. This is... Okay, I knew you might have a problem with this. All right, so look,
Here we go.
Remember, just because it's number four doesn't mean I'm recommending it. All right. The Highwaymen is a Kevin Costner and Woody Harrelson film. It's a Netflix original, and it basically follows the untold true story, apparently, of the legendary detectives who brought down Bonnie and Clyde. So what's this, like 1920s and some?
I don't know. I stopped paying attention. It was so fucking boring.
Oh my God. All right. This is funny. So these two guys are basically hired to go out and kill Bonnie and Clyde, right? Which it turns out they did. And it felt, the reason I looked at it is that it looks from the trailers and the stills that it looks like True Detective, man. It looked a bit like True Detective.
What?
The way it looks. The looks, because it's these two guys, it's, you know, in the back. Anyway, it's not as good, obviously.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I was reaching for the soundboard there, but you just redeemed yourself.
The problem is, it's like, I don't know, I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it like you hated it. But
I didn't hate it, I was just disappointed.
It just isn't as dynamic or memorable as it could be.
I'm not angry at you, Highwayman. I'm just disappointed.
Just disappointed, exactly. It builds some compelling drama, but what it does do is it's so stretched out. It's so... Too long. Too long, nothing happens for a while. And for very big stretches, you're just seeing scene after scene after scene. There's some promising
things.
That's
what happens in every film.
No. You're a dickhead. You know what I mean? You fucking clit ring. I'm seeing the...
Not often I get underway. I think it just happened.
There's no interconnectivity that makes you go, oh, this is a logical sequence.
Right.
But because like there's one bit where Kevin Costner buys like 200,000 guns and just sticks them in his car. And I'm like, this is going to be wicked. It's not that wicked, eh? It's not that wicked.
I think there are two really good scenes in this film.
Yeah, what?
One is Costner getting to do his acting thing. One is Harrelson getting to do his acting thing. And that rescues this film from being an absolute
dive. What?
Because it's not an action film. It's not a chase film. And yet that's what you're sold on the trailer.
That's the problem with this movie. It's promising one thing. Mm. And, you know, I don't know.
It's just a drama. It's just a character study of two men who are past their prime, who are asked to do one last job. But they're on the side of the law, which is the spin on that old kind of take.
And I could get behind that because The Old Man and the Gun is a Robert Redford movie that came out this year.
That was better.
I really liked that. And it was dealing basically with your obsolescence or whatever, just the idea of what do you do with your life, right? So I get that and I could enjoy that, but I couldn't with this one because it wasn't interesting enough. So that's the problem. Yep. A lot of grizzling dialogue as well. I had to dial it back a few times because Kevin Costner would be like, I'm like, the fuck? What'd he say? I don't know. Weird, you know, sound editing. Weird. But yeah, not for me, people. And not for you either.
Still not recommend number four.
Nope.
I have officially passed that then, with Booksmart. My number four is a documentary. It's the oldest film on my list. And I'll try to keep it current and contemporary, but I really want to talk about this one. It's one of two films. This is called The Look of Silence. And it follows a film called The Art of Killing, both directed by Joshua Oppenheimer. And it's effectively, it's about Indonesia and the wars that took place there back in the, I think it was the 60s or the 70s.
Okay.
And the genocide that basically happened with people that supported communism and those that didn't.
Yeah.
So those that didn't were doing the killing effectively. And it was just an excuse to get rid of people who you didn't like.
So
the next door neighbor whose dog barks too loud, and I'm being flippant here about something that's very, very serious, but if you report them to the local authorities and your friends enough and grease their palms with enough money,
they'll come kill them.
They will be reported as a communist, and then a kill squad will come, take them out of their house, and they'll disappear and never be seen again.
Bloody hell.
So the Art of Killing follows three or four, I can't remember off the top of my head, of the generals who were instrumental in organizing these kill squads.
Wow.
And ask them, basically get them to make a film about the genocide.
Wait, is it a doco? Killing.
Yeah, it's a doco.
It's a doco!
It's a doco, yeah. So the real life people who did this and organized this shit in 2014 or 2013, I think, in the case of the Act of Killing, asked them to make a film in a style. So one's a musical, one's a gangster film, one's a comic, I can't remember, of the killings.
And
so they're directing these little films with their mates all in there and pretending.
Are you shitting me?
And at least one of them, if not more than one, because a couple get very introspective, realize what monsters they've become. This film, The Look of Silence, I thought was better because it's a lot more contained. It's a simpler story about one guy whose brother was killed.
This is a doco.
Yep.
All right.
And he is an optometrist or an optician, and he's going around to people and he's fitting them for glasses and whatever, and and they set it up so he's going to people who are involved in these massacres.
Yeah.
And he starts confronting them about, you killed my brother. Specifically, some of them were involved in that act. And you killed dozens, if not hundreds of people. How the fuck do you feel about that? And it's uncomfortable as fuck.
Really?
It is brave filmmaking.
So you felt that it was is obviously hard-hitting, right?
Yeah, very much so.
Doco.
If you see The Act of Killing...
Paul doesn't watch that many docos.
No. If you see The Act of Killing, don't watch the extended director's cut, which I did by accident, because it's 2.5 fucking hours.
Whoops.
And it's way too long. I think the theatrical release is more like 2 hours. Hmm. That would have been perfect.
All right.
Yep.
Okay, shit.
So it's a little bit of a cheat. Act of Killing / Look of Silence. Look of Silence I like better because it's just a straightforward, pretty much 90-minute film. Oh, no, it's a 100-minute film. Still.
Do you need to have seen the first one?
Not really. You can probably watch it separately if you wanted to, but they do work as companion pieces very well. So no jokes there. Sorry, it's too serious to make jokes about.
Well, that's done because from that seriousness, we'll go to my number three, which is a Netflix,
Original.
Original, yeah. Not Netflix. YouTube. YouTube original.
Oh, you got YouTube Red or whatever it is?
Yes, YouTube. Yeah, Premium it's called now.
Oh.
And it's about boy bands.
What? No.
Yes, this documentary is called The Boy Band Con, The Lou Pearlman Story. Now,
What the fuck?
Oh, dude. Okay, first
of all. Recommend?
It's a recommend if you like boy bands. No, and there's some of you out there. There's some of you out there, okay?
All six of you.
This is a documentary produced by Lance Bass of NSYNC. And the film explores like the career and legacy of this record producer named Lou Pearlman. Back in the 90s during the boy band craze, the two big boy bands were Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. And these bands like created were created by the same guy, Lou Pearlman, who's this fat old guy who, it turns out, is something of a confidence trickster.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yes. He took all the millions from the performances and the concerts and they gave them nothing back. And so much so that the two bands finally got together because they were pitted against each other and said, fuck it, we're gonna sue Lou for all the money that he should have given us. And they did that. There's this that big story. But it turns out this guy actually created also the largest Ponzi scheme in the history of time.
Wow.
He, after the boy band thing, he went to jail, died in jail. Like, he's a real weird piece of work. Because they interview some of the Backstreet Boys and their moms and people in the investment, like, who got all the Ponzi scheme. Really cool. Really, it was actually an enjoyable watch.
Wow.
So I'm saying. Inconceivable. I know. But if you like boy band stuff, it's funnier as well because you get to actually see these guys now. You're like,
all right. Well, that's a shock to me, I have to admit. I'm pleased for you that you enjoyed it. My number three is the other advanced screening you have to see for a film that will come out 2 days after this episode drops.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are in Australia, it's in Australia, by the way. If you're Australian and you're at all interested in this one, you should be able to check it out in very short order. It's called Danger Close, The Battle of Long Tan.
Wait, I've heard of this one.
And it is directed by Kriv Stenders, the guy who did Red Dog and Red Dog True Blue.
Oh, yeah.
So this is a Vietnam War film which commemorates and celebrates the battalion, a unit of 100 Australian soldiers who stood against 2,000 Vietnamese, North Vietnamese and Viet Cong.
Wow.
Held their ground and most of which survived.
Yet, really?
18 Australians died and approximately 245 Vietnamese died in this battle. And
damn, you're going dark, man, with this shit.
Yeah, it's a two-hour film, and obviously there's nothing funny about this. This is a straight-up war film. I have to say, for an Australian film, it's one of the best war films I've seen.
Oh, that's big. That's big. So production value?
Yeah, the production value is very good. There was actually an executive producer in the audience when I saw this.
Yeah.
And it was if not the biggest advanced screening I've ever been to, it was very close to it. So by the time I got into the cinema, I had the choice between the front row and the second front row to the side. And it was a massive cinema.
Wow.
It was the one where we saw Hereditary.
Yeah. Big ass.
And we were in the front row for that. Yeah. So they're the two biggest screenings that I.
A bit of buzz about this, is there?
Well, I don't know. There's an organization in Australia called Legacy, which is to support the family of veterans and the like.
Yep.
So they were there in force. There was obviously a lot of ex-servicemen who were there, or service people, who were there as well.
Cool.
And so it had a lot of gravitas, the screening. So much so that the executive producer said, as a sign of respect to the fallen, please stay during the end credits. Don't get up and leave when the lights come up.
Okay.
So it added something to it, and maybe my score wouldn't be as high as it was were it not for that cinematic experience.
If you go to any kind of production-related shoot, I remember seeing the Ricky Gervais Netflix film when him and Eric Bana were there with us.
Well, that's amazing.
And that made it really good. Like, look at the movie. It's like, it's just okay. You know?
Special Correspondence.
Special Correspondence. Yeah, that one, right? So that was fine, but like, I know what you mean. So you like this film because is it just for an Aussie production, or is it that it's exciting, or is it just well done?
Look, it's well made. I think the technical aspects of the film, so it's well shot. The cinematography is very good. Mm-hmm. The score is phenomenal.
Okay.
From Caitlin Yeo, I think her name is.
Yeah.
And the editor does a very good job as well, because basically four squads get separated and are in separate areas at various points in the film. And she's jumping between them. The editor, Veronica Jeanette, does a good job of being, you can tell who's who and what's going on where. And that's not easy in this kind of film. However, it's almost 2 hours long, and it does get very same by the end.
Does it? Okay.
So by the last 20 minutes, when they are eventually about to be overrun and they have pulled back together, you're like, I'm a bit over this
same
now.
Notes? Yeah.
A little bit. Like, it does kind of shoot its load a little bit early. The other problem is it clearly is not Vietnam they're shooting in. Clearly.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. I could tell this. I'm like, that looks nothing like the jungle.
It's Queensland.
It is Queensland.
Is it?
You're 100% right.
Because there's kind of jungles there.
It didn't look like Vietnam to me, and I'm not an expert in that at all, but that was a little bit of a problem for me. It's Travis Fimmel, I think his name is. He's from Vikings. He's the lead character. He's this ex-commando who's in charge of this Delta squad or platoon or whatever they are, and he gets better the further the film goes. I did not buy him as a badass at all at the start. He's got some crazy-looking eyes. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But as the film goes, I really did start to believe in his role. And did you watch The Dirt? The Motley Crue film. So the guy who plays the lead singer, he is in this film as well, playing a sort of recruit.
A bit of a budget, maybe.
Private, and as well as Luke Bracey, who was in Hacksaw Ridge, as the antagonist to Andrew Garfield's.
Yep, oh, I sort of remember him.
Yeah, he's in this again, playing a very similar kind of role. Overall, good film. However, and here's the biggest problem, and why I can't give it more than sort of three and a half stars. in this day and age to gloss over the fact that, yeah, 18 Australians died, 245 Vietnamese died.
Yeah, but they always do that. If it's told by from one perspective, that's always going to happen.
I know, but it does really feel like a bit of jingoistic, kind of rah, 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 we're invading their country, but fuck all that. Look at these. And look,
It's sensitive.
I'm not knocking the sacrifice of these 18 men.
No, not at all. But I know what you mean. As from a filmmaking point of view,
yeah.
There's perhaps needs to be.
Like I said, in this day and age, had this been made 20 years ago or 30 years ago, it would have been absolutely phenomenal.
If you make a hero in a movie, he has to triumph over something. So what do you do?
But they're not anything. They're just wait. Like they're not depicted as evil or bad. They're just coming at them and trying to kill them.
Yeah.
Like it's something's not right about that.
You're taking a side there as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know. All right.
So that's my three then, and well worth checking out. Mm-hmm. And I hope it does make international distribution so that some of our international listeners can listen as well. Over to you for your number two, sir.
My number two is, again, a big change of pace because fucked if I know about that stuff. This is an old, 2005. It's a romantic comedy.
Well, it's old by today's standards.
It is. It's got Meryl Streep and Uma Thurman in it, and it's called Prime.
Never heard of it.
You never heard of it. Okay. Basically, Meryl Streep, I know why she's good, man, just looking at this film, because she's doing comedy in this film, and it kills, right? She's a shrink, much like herself. And,
sure.
That's right. And her customer, or her client, you call it, is Uma Thurman, who's this like 37-year-old, beautiful like photography producer, and she recently had a divorce, and basically her and Meryl Streep are, you know, patient and client or whatever, but they have a very strong bond, like because they've been seeing each other for years and years.
Okay,
and years.
Sure.
So actually, buy into that. Yeah. Then Uma Thurman starts dating this young guy. He's like 23, and she's like, "Oh my god!" and sort of thing, right? And she tells her therapist, and she's like, "Go for it. Why not? It's a young guy. Awesome." Turns out the young guy's her son.
Oh.
Oh yeah.
My shit was dark.
No. But it's a comedy. Because what then happens is you've got these scenes where
there's nothing funny than fucking your son.
Well, this is the fun. No, it's just a girl fucking your son is what happens.
Oh, her son, sorry.
Yeah. Uma Thurman is fucking Meryl Streep's son.
Oh, that's slightly better.
Yeah. Oh, God. Hell no. I wouldn't be laughing at that.
I was like, why is Wayne so flippant?
I said, that's the exact porn I fucking avoid. I do not like that shit.
The one type of porn Wayne avoids, got it.
The one type. But, well, this might be a bit of a come down after that, but basically the comedy then is played where Meryl Streep finds out that, oh my god, the guy she's talking about is my son. She goes to her own therapist and says, what do I do? Now, I don't know how this would work in your world, Paul, but that therapist says to her, listen, you've got a client. You've got an obligation to your client. You have to go and continue to treat her. I would have thought she'd say, now there's a dual relationship and we can't really see each other. Isn't that what would happen? Okay, good. Anyway, she doesn't do that. And so basically what then goes on is these scenes where Uma Thurman's talking about, oh, you should see this guy's cock. And she goes on and talks about it. And Meryl Streep is sitting there playing like, I can't hear this, but she's trying to hide it. Really, really good performances. So I'm telling you.
Not even a breath of this film. Where did you find this?
I saw it on the line. I was on Netflix. Well, I can't remember where it was, but one of those services. And I just went, oh, this will be interesting. And I can't remember why I watched it.
I do tend to avoid films about therapy.
You know what? Yeah, you would, because it's like, you just bring work home. Yeah. Exactly. But you know what? I think I saw half of this on a plane, one back in 2005. And I just fell asleep. And I was like, oh, I didn't get to finish that movie, so I saw it now.
High endorsement.
No, it's because I was just a long flight. But yeah, that was it. So Prime is actually good, in my opinion, if you're a sensitive man like me.
Okay. All right, well, I guess we know what your number one is.
Oh,
then.
You do.
My number two is a film, also a Netflix original. It's very close to my best of, it's just behind Stranger Things. Season 3 as my favorite thing that's come out on Netflix this year. It's called The Perfection.
Oh, what's that?
It's a film directed by Richard Shepherd, and it stars Alison Williams from Get Out. She's the girlfriend.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And Logan Browning and Stephen Weber from the old school show Wings.
I remember Stephen Weber. I know exactly who that is.
It's basically a film about a world-class celloist.
Mm-hmm.
Cellist. Who's coming back to it after taking a whole bunch of years out, sort of 10 or 12 years, to care for her dying mother, mm-hmm. who eventually dies of cancer at the start of the film.
Yep.
There's some flashbacky stuff when she's more like a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
So she's in her late 20s, I would guess. She goes back to them and they're overjoyed to see her because she was the best that had ever been. But she's been surpassed by Logan Browning's character, who is now the greatest cellist in the world, or this institute, this specialist music institute run by Stephen Weber and his wife.
Okay.
Now, I have to kind of stop the description around this point. For spoilers point, because this whole film rests on Spoilers.
Is it a drama?
It is not a drama.
It is not a drama.
It is a thriller. Possibly some would even label it a horror.
Perfection, is that what you called it?
The Perfection.
The Perfection.
Yep. I thought, because I wasn't
horror
prepared.
Chillest.
And I had a real problem with the trailer in a note that the trailer plays, which is explained perfectly through the course of the film. So I went in expecting this to be average. And I was pleasantly surprised.
Okay, that's what I mean.
It is, however, as we've now dubbed this, a Durian film.
Oh, everyone hates Durian.
No, some people love it.
Everyone fuck. Oh, you know what? Yeah, you're right. Some freaks like people in my family fucking love it. It smells like vomit.
Some people call Marmite films. Now we're calling this. We're officially announcing this today. It's a new term, like De Palmering. It's a Durian film.
If anyone doesn't know, a durian is like a real spiky ass big fruit that you get in Asia, mm-hmm. and it.
It smells like the sewer.
It smells like vomit, for real, yeah, vomit.
It doesn't taste like that. Oh, to me, it smelled like the sewer. That's what I remember it being like.
To me, I couldn't get past it. I did try it, and I'm like, this is shit. Yep. Fuck it, I can't, and I leave.
Right? This is Fruit Reviews, the countdown. Number two most divisive.
Next week, Paul. Okay. All right.
So that's
okay.
My two, The Perfection. Right. Yeah, check it out. I'd be interested in your take.
Okay, The Perfection. Horror, you say.
Yeah, it has some horror notes.
Okay.
It's a thriller above all else.
Okay, that's good. My number one was Booksmart, of course, and everyone should go see that. Seriously, I was like, oh, who cares about... No, it's great.
All right, we're not comparing lists, but where does it cross the line? Where is your recommend point?
My recommend point was actually at the fucking NSYNC back... The boy band con. Yeah, number three.
Wow, so you had a really poor list this
week. It was shit. It was shit. But hopefully no one will see those seven.
My recommend is softly at Lucas at number six. Everything below that, yeah, you can.
Oh, no, that's pretty good.
Piss
pretty
off.
Good. Yeah.
My number one is.
This should be good.
Maybe a bit of a cheat in some ways, but it's a film. It exists on Netflix.
All right.
It's a film of a concert that we've been to.
Oh.
It's Hans Zimmer live in Prague.
Yeah, it's a total cheat.
Live in Prague is 2 hours. And change.
Oh, you would have fucking come in your pants through this thing, man.
I literally have the CD. It's like the last CD I bought and the only CD I bought in the last 2 years.
This is number one, Cracker.
Like, you remember how good that concert was, right?
Yeah. No, it was a good concert. It was a good concert, for sure.
To see it there on stage and in surround sound again.
No, you and your pimped out TV.
Arguably again. Better than the sound we got live. And then to be close up to see all your favorite women whom you were drooling over during the course of the performance.
He has a very attractive strings girl.
Yeah, he's got several attractive strings girls.
Yeah, but the mean one. The cellist. Yeah, she's awesome.
Yeah, so all that was fantastic. And the choice of song, it's magnificent. It is utter class from my favorite composer of all time.
For the record, everyone, Paul and I don't agree on this whole score thing. I understand that it's important, but to listen to it without the movie, what is the point? But
it was.
Except the Batman score. That thing's awesome.
138 minutes of pure class. Hans Zimmer live in Prague. If you are a film fan, you've yet to check out this either in... person, because he's coming back around for a second tour, not coming here. I was fucking dark. Melbourne, Sydney, and Brisbane only. So I'm not going to go across the other side of Australia.
Of course, you don't, you fucking idiot. This is
I did that. I did it for Muse.
I did it for John Mayer, but it's not, this is no John Mayer or Muse. It's the
you
scores.
You just don't understand scores. Scores are integral to every film.
They are, but not on their own. So go on.
Yeah, so this was the best thing I watched in a long, long time.
That is a really odd left field decision from you, because that means that you absolutely, like, totally lost 7 or 8 loads if you're putting kind of movie at your number one. Yep. That's big. And remember, Paul just watched 200,000 movies, right?
100,000 what?
That's right. An ass ton of that stupid ass challenge he did. He just saw an ass load of movies, and this is his number one, everyone.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Yeah, well, it's not the best. Yeah, it is. It's the best thing I've seen all year.
This is like we curate the list.
Yes, there you go. That's my recommend. Hard recommend there. Believe me, it was hard.
Oh, yeah. Kaboom. All right.
All right, that's it for our top 10 last 10. No need for honorable mentions, because we're straight into then your feedback with your reviews of things you've watched recently in our pop 10.
Talk about pop 10. Talk about pop 10.
Kicking off this week's Pop 10 with one-line reviews, as stated, of your recent films. Dan Brennick from the Netflix and Swill podcast said this: minimalist in every way, Arctic highlights the idiom less is more in the best ways.
What is that, a doco?
No, Arctic is a film that stars Mads Mikkelsen as a guy stranded in the Arctic all by himself.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I unsurprisingly saw it.
No, not surprised at all.
Adam Miller, recent top level patron of the show. Adam has upgraded himself there. Thank you so much, Adam, for your support. Secret Obsession, : why did I watch this?
Really? Have you heard of it?
It's a new Netflix film. Looks fucking awful.
Really? Oh, dear.
Quite a few people jumped in there to suggest
it's a piece
thing.
Of shit.
Yeah,
okay, fine.
It's ridiculously awful. Adam Thomas said the end of Evangelion. That cleared absolutely nothing up. Fuck's sake.
Have you ever watched those shins?
I've watched that film because it's on the IMDb top 250.
The original event, yeah.
I didn't watch the 22 or 25 episodes of it, and then the film that comes before it, and then I just watched End of Evangelion,
and
it made no sense whatsoever.
Yeah.
But apparently if you watch the whole thing, it makes almost no sense whatsoever.
Yeah, Akira's like that. Akira can make no damn sense. So, all
right. So, right there with you, Adam. Timothy Cormack, The Lion King. Hey! What's the movie behind us saying hello?
That was quite a performance there.
Hope I did justice for you there, Tim.
Well done.
Thank you for that review. Now, this is with a heavy heart I report this one-line review from our good friend, Billy Dunham, from the We Watch the Thing podcast. Mm-hmm. Do check them out if you haven't already. Logan, a totally fine, enjoyable movie that didn't live up to the hype for me.
Whoa. Okay, shit.
He basically just
said... He must have heard the movie sucks your dick or something.
Yeah, well, maybe listen to me and you and I talking about
or
it.
Or that,
as
which is what we said. Yeah.
One particular source of that. But yeah, he later said, look, I liked it. It just wasn't great.
Damn.
And that prompted a lot of anger and disappointment and hurt. And hurt from the... Not just from me, but from Sam from the Movie Reviews and 20Qs podcast.
Sure. Okay,
as well. And shout out to Sam and Stacey for the birth of their daughter.
What up? Congratulations.
Congratulations on the welcome addition to the family. Chef Ben Randall, I was not prepared for Winnie the Pooh to be so scary. Me, after watching Christopher Robin.
Really? I haven't seen it yet, but I want to see it. Really? Yeah. Okay, all right.
Mileage will vary.
Okay.
The aforementioned Kevin Lawlor, or what do you say?
Lawlor. I'm sure it's Lawlor.
Lawlor. Jack of All Trades was not the stupid baseball card documentary I expected it to be.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Glenn Sutherland said, the dead don't die, which I'm keen, or I was keen for, but the reviews floating out of the States. This came out in June.
Sounds like a horror movie.
In October.
Oh, really?
For fuck's sake, can we just pause for a moment?
Is it a horror movie?
Yeah. Well, it's a horror comedy Jim Jarmusch film.
Oh, fuck it. Who gives a shit? Keep it. Don't even release it here. No Star Wars watching, motherfucker.
Anyway.
I can't believe he's doing another film.
Point being. There's this run of films at the moment which have been delayed to us here. Like Midsommar is
I don't understand why they
late.
Do that now.
Once Upon a Time in America, in Hollywood, is late.
Yeah.
That would be really bad if Once Upon a Time in America hadn't come out here yet. And now we've got this one that's just 3-4 months. Like, come on, lift your fucking game.
It's a little
weird.
Do
you think anyone in Australia is going to go and see The Dead Don't Die at the cinemas when it'll be freely available to download by October? Fucking wake up to yourselves, distributors, please.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay.
Well, that's my rant for today on that particular topic. Paul Murphy. Dear Zachary, a letter to a son.
I'm still unseen it.
About his father. Heart-rending, tear-jerking, true story, harsh as fuck, cry like a baby, fuck you, Paul.
Yeah. A lot of people feel that way.
Thank you very much for that, Paul. I'm glad. I think that you kind of pseudo-enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Jake Humphrey, League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. Not as bad as everyone says.
That's right. It's fucking fine. You know what? It's good.
But still, what the fuck, Wayne?
It's good, damn it.
Fun fact, this is my wife's favorite movie.
Word, see?
Jake, quietly keep Wayne and your wife apart. Blake Jarvis, aforementioned The Beach Bum, a pointless disaster. I'm going to be ragging on this film all year. And that is it for this week's Pop 10. Thank you so much to everyone who got back to us in our Facebook listening community. This one's a bit of an exclusive one just for the people there. If you're not on board, join the Facebook listening community, link in the show notes. And how else do our listeners get in touch with us with their feedback about episodes and indeed their responses to the topics at hand?
Go ahead and Google the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews and you'll find us, or send us an email at thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
We're on Twitter at thecountdownpc. We host our show through Podbean and you can find us on the CC Radio website, ccradio.com.au, where we share the site with a bunch of other great shows, including Comic Confidential and Believe. That is it for this week's show, episode 227. Done and dusted. Another top 10, last 10. Bunch of films to recommend. A whole bunch to avoid.
That's right.
Especially Wayne's List.
Oh, yes. Don't even touch that shit.
Bottom heavy with
shit. Oh, it's Balzac. It's Balzac.
What's happening next week, Wayne, for episode 228?
Don't know. Cunt lips.
Go to the music.
Next week, we're going to do the top 10 films that were never made. That's like a movie that we thought was, you know, in the development hell or in production or something.
Yeah.
For some reason, never dropped, but we think it would have been awesome.
Yeah, and why we think it would be awesome. So a bit of a celebration of the stuff that if only it had got over the line.
Yep, totally.
Right, that should be a lot of fun. And that is it for today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for chilling, y'all.
For listening in on the Top 10 Last 10 and for your support of the show overall. We really, truly do appreciate it.
It's you rock.
Been a blast. My name is Paul.
My name is Wayne.
And this has been... Of course, the soundboard.
Nice vamping. This, of course.
You insignificant cunt, little fuck.
In fact, I might leave all that in. I was going to cut it out.
You may as well. If you're going to leave shit like the soundboard in, you could just leave all of our shit.
You are a sad, strange little man.
Bitch.
Have my pick.
We'll see you next week.